My guest this evening on Around Cincinnati is Chris Williams. He's an author and an editor, but also a professor of Welsh history, a director of the Research Institute of Arts and Humanities, and a deputy director of the College of Arts and Humanities in Wales, which is pretty handy because the subject of the book is the Richard Burton Diaries. Welcome to Around Cincinnati, Chris.
Well, it's great to be with you, Larry.
Well, you know, it's not often that a book about a famous person, you get to work with their actual words and thoughts that came straight out of their brain. Do you approach that differently?
Well, it's been a very interesting challenge because working on Richard Burton's diaries, you are constantly reminded of the man through his work, his films, his poetry CDs, which you can obtain. There are interviews on screen, on YouTube. So in a way, although he's been dead for 27 years, nonetheless, I felt that he sometimes was in the room with me while I was doing this work.
And I noticed that he had a few notations early on in 1940-something when he was a young boy, but then it sort of jumped to 1960. Did he just totally skip diary keeping in that period?
We don't know for sure. It's possible that he kept diaries and that they were lost or destroyed, or possibly that they may be somewhere and they'll turn up one day. But we have no evidence of their existence, and he doesn't comment in the diaries on missing years or anything like that. So all I can assume is that he perhaps was too busy during those years, particularly in the 1950s, when he was becoming a really important stage actor and making his first steps in Hollywood. Perhaps he was too busy to keep a diary, or that he just didn't think of it, that that wasn't really important to him at that point. So most of the diaries start in the mid-1960s and go through to the early 1970s. That's the bulk of them. And that's when he is, of course, married to Elizabeth Taylor.
And which is, I'm sure, what most people are interested in, more or less, which was quite a tempestuous time in both of their lives.
It certainly was. I think the diary is very interesting because they reveal that it wasn't all throwing things at each other and cursing and shouting, but they did have some ordinary times together. They had plenty of lovely meals together and saw fascinating people and visited wonderful sites and often just took pleasure in doing things like having a bowl of soup together or eating a packet of toffees. You know, sometimes you get these kind of rather prosaic insights into the ordinary life of one of the world's most celebrated couples.
Well, there's actually nothing wrong with ordinary because I got the impression that despite the images of all the fighting and boozing and all that, these people really loved each other.
I think that's very true. I think that Elizabeth comes out of the diaries very well. She comes out as somebody who's a very warm person, who very much loved Richard, who did her very best to keep him on the straight and narrow. And he certainly admired her. You know, he admired her immensely as a beauty, as a woman, but also as a professional, as an actress, a film actress. And I think they were very close. I think they had a unique bond for at least 10 years. And maybe in the end, you know, the other pressures on them and some of the demons in Richard's life caused that relationship to falter. But they remained friends to the end of his life.
Well, I also thought that it's very interesting for people to read about this man because the only impression they have of him probably is from the films. And I'm betting there are folks out there who believe that the Richard Burton-Elizabeth Taylor relationship in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf was a documentary of their real life, which was really not the case.
That's absolutely right. And you often see the clips from that film used as if that was really what it was like. Now, I know that all actors draw on their own experiences, but equally, you know, they made some other films as well, apart from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, in which they drew on other elements of their relationship. So The Taming of the Shrew, for instance. Mm-hmm. But equally, they made a very weird film in the early 1970s called Hammersmith Is Out, in which Richard appears an escaped lunatic. So I don't think we should necessarily take what's in the films as representative of reality.
When compared to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, the film of theirs I think of that may actually represent a better side of their relationship is the VIPs.
Yeah, I saw that film fairly recently, actually. It's only just been re-released in the United Kingdom. Of course, that's a film they made right at the very beginning of their sort of stable relationship, and it was an opportunity for them to work together and therefore to be together, although they actually had adjoining suites at the Dorchester Hotel. They didn't share the same bedroom at that point for propriety's sake. But it's an interesting film, and from a British point of view, there are some interesting character actors who appear in it. It's got a kind of oldie-worldy glamour to it, but I suspect that for modern-day audiences, I'm afraid it does look a bit dated.
Well, I sort of take it as a 60s version of Grand Hotel in color and CinemaScope.
I think that's a good point. I think the production of it is quite lavish. It's an attractive film to look at, and Burton is in good shape in that film. He wasn't always in good shape. He doesn't always look particularly healthy on screen, but in that film, I think you get some sense of his charisma and perhaps his sex appeal.
And let's not forget his talent. I mean, after all, the guy was nominated, what, 6 times for an Oscar, but never won anything?
That's correct, yeah. I mean, he was a very talented actor. Many people thought that he should have won an Oscar for his performance in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Possibly, had he lived longer, he would have been recognized by the Academy, even for a slightly inferior film, as sometimes actors are, if they stick around long enough and they become loved. But, of course, he died when he was just 58 in 1984, and so never had that opportunity. And I think he always really felt that he wanted an Oscar. He wanted that level of recognition, although at the same time, he chose to suggest that actually it didn't matter to him. But I think it did deep down.
I would think, too, that maybe somewhere with 6 nominations, they would have considered a Life Achievement Award, but that didn't happen either.
No, that's correct. And for a while, at least, he had the dubious distinction of being the actor who was most nominated without an Oscar win. I think he may have been surpassed in that now by his friend Peter O'Toole. But, yeah, it wasn't something that he really would have wanted on his curriculum vitae. But I think he knew as well that often the odds were just stacked against him. He felt perhaps he was too much of an outsider to win in Hollywood, that he didn't play the game with the studios with sufficient tact.
Well, what were you most surprised to find out about Richard Burton once you started digging through all these volumes of his notes?
I think I was most surprised, I think readers will be most surprised, to learn just how interested Richard was in scholarship, in writing, in history, in literature, in biography, in contemporary politics. A lot of the diaries are his observations on what he's been reading and what's been going on in the world around him. And I think he was a serious man. He wanted to understand the world, and he appreciated good writing. He often said that he would rather have been a writer than an actor. And at times in the diaries, he talks about how he might be able to make this possible. It never really works out. He does write some short pieces, magazine articles and reviews, but he never manages to write the great work of scholarship that I think he really would have wished to.
Or, in fact, actually had the capability to do, because his writings in the diaries, some of them are quite eloquent.
Indeed, yes. And I think he potentially could have done something very good in writing, but he needed to give himself the space, the time, and the support networks to achieve that. And he considers that very seriously at the beginning of the 1970s. But then family tragedy intervenes, his brother Ivor dies, and I think that plunges Richard into quite a deep depression. And he never comes out of that fully, and he never really recaptures that desire and ambition to actually sit down and commit himself to writing a serious book.
What's your favorite Burton film?
I think my favorite Burton film is The Spy Who Came In From the Cold, based on the John le Carré novel. It's a very good film, and I think Burton is excellent in it.
And I think my pick would have to go to Night of the Iguana. He seemed like he was just having a marvelous time with those cast members and with John Huston.
I think that's another very, very strong film. And as you say, it's great to see him playing in that film alongside Ava Gardner and Deborah Kerr.
And Sue Lyon.
And Sue Lyon, yeah, absolutely.
I mean, she didn't have a whole lot of a career, but when she did occasionally, she really sparkled, like with that and with Kubrick and Lolita.
Yes, and I think Elizabeth Taylor, of course, famously was accompanying Richard to that set and keeping a very close eye on him when he was surrounded by so many beautiful women.
I don't doubt it. Well, we've been talking with Chris Williams, the editor of the Richard Burton Diaries, which if you're a fan of acting, movies, or just good literature, I certainly encourage you to pick it up and take a look at it. It was a fascinating read, Chris, and I thank you so much for taking time to be here on Around Cincinnati with us.
That's an absolute pleasure, Larry. Thank you very much for having me.
For Around Cincinnati, I'm Larry Thomas.
Do not go gentle into that good night. Old age should burn and rave at close of day. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. Though wise men at their end know dark is right, because their words had forked no lightning, they do not go gentle into that good night. Good men, the last wave by, crying how bright their frail deeds might have danced in a green bay, rage, rage against the dying of the light. Wild men who caught and sang the sun in flight and learned too late they grieved it on its way, do not go gentle into that good night. Grave men near death who see with blinding sight, blind eyes could blaze like meteors and be gay. Rage, rage against the dying of the light. And you, my father, there on the sad height, curse, bless me now with your fierce tears, I pray. Do not go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the dying of the light.